Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Will Stevenson. He's going to definitely do a better job explaining his pedigree than I am because there's been a lot of shifting and changes amongst, or among, I'm trying to figure out if this is the grammatically correct way of saying it, but amongst both of them, Artery, a company that has launched the careers of many, many artists, including Attila, who's now a main stage band at Warped Tour, so go figure. Again, I am sad because Emily Burke, the best co-host and the best assistant of all time in the entire stratosphere, is not here right now. So I'm doing this interview solo. She'll be back for the holidays and then for the summer, where I will be excited. So next week, by the time next week happens, that's going to be in, I'd say, mid-November, approaching Thanksgiving. I will actually be away. I'm going to be in Ohio doing some music of my own for the project Lido Beach, just for fun. But the next bunch of guests are going to be cool. We've got Moshe Isaacson, who's from the tech world. So we try to have managers. We've had a few artists, some A&R people, some publicists, people from every genre of the behind-the-scenes market. And Moshe knows a lot about, I guess, digital strategy, social media, so hopefully he'll be able to teach you guys something. And speaking of teachers, we've got Dave Bogan, who actually teaches a course at UCLA and knows far too much about this industry, so I'm really excited to have him on the show. So, you know, it's going to be a really, really good few weeks. I can't believe, and I was actually just speaking with a new Adobe host named Brett Davern, who is shocked that I'm booked out until next year, July, but this is how I roll. I come to Adobe once a week, I have some Dunkin' Donuts coffee on the machine, and then I just do my thing, and I finally use that phrase that a lot of rappers use, so I'm stoked on that. Let me look at the calendar a little bit more. I'm actually going to be going to Sedona with my wife, which I'm way too excited about. It's going to be disconnection vacation after that. And then shortly after I get back, I have, let's see, doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop, just a series of bunch of people. I actually have Jenna Pell from Catalyst, which is a major, major publicity company that was actually taking part in the recent tragedy in Las Vegas, which isn't so recent now, but we should never stop talking about it. It was punks in Vegas, and every penny went towards, you know, a trauma center. So bands like Sum 41 and the Wonder Years and the Menzingers and Taking Back Sunday were on it. And actually, two bands I manage, a band that Will likes called Boomtown Crooks and a band called Film Speed, who have a record out on Awfully Good Records. So enough about me. Let's get back to Will. We actually just reached the pie mark of 3.14 minutes so far. So I'm stoked on that. And I just appreciate everyone who's listening. I think we're all going to learn a lot, including me. I'm looking forward to learning more about Will and his beard and Sacramento and just life in the fast lane. So stick around. We're going to reach out to Will, and we'll be back after these commercials every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, which is the time zone for Will and myself, and 8 o'clock on the East Coast, and rerunning bright and early Sunday mornings, 5 a.m., Pacific time, 8 a.m. on the East Coast, so you can get your Dunkin' Donuts on either coast and rock out with me. Stick around. Hello, welcome back to Waldman's Words with Mr. Will Stevenson.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me.
It's really dope to have you. I don't get to talk to people from Sacramento that often, so just having you on is reminding me of our state's capital. And I know that you're a very passionate supporter of our state's capital, so thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I'm really happy. It's always nice, you know, to not be ignored by the big people in L.A., you know, get remembered, you know, up here. And the scene up here is definitely growing, so it's an exciting time to be in Sacramento right now.
You're the first person to call me big ever. So I'm going to take that, and I'm going to frame that and put it on my Frigidaire for my wife to see. So at any rate, did you grow up in Northern California? I want to know your deal. We've spoken a few times on the phone, but I never really got into the nitty-gritty.
Actually, I was born and raised in Denver, Colorado, just outside of Denver, a suburb. And I lived there the first 18 years of my life. And then I actually came out to California to go to school. I went to University of the Pacific in Stockton, California, and graduated from there in 2007. So as soon as I graduated, I actually started interning at Artery the beginning of my senior year, so like September of 2006. And I've been here ever since, as they say.
I mean, that's an eternity in the music business. But I actually want to go. It's so weird because people just shift all the time. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to shift from the company named Waldman Management because it's kind of tattooed on my throat like I'm in an Artery band. But basically, what about Colorado? Like, how involved in the music scene were you growing up? Because I actually just spoke with someone, and we were talking about the Marquee Theater, and we were talking about the rise of, you know, bands like 303. And I don't know if you recall, there was this band called Single File that was severely underrated.
Mm-hmm. I do, actually. I kind of grew up in a really interesting time around Denver. Obviously, I think, like a lot of people who work in the music business, you get your start by, like, you know, going to shows, being a fan, first and foremost, and we didn't have the Marquee, at least when I was growing up. The Marquee didn't really open until I actually went for California and went to college. I grew up going to shows at, like, the Ogden Theater and the Fillmore and the Bluebird and the Gothic. These were all, like, so I remember Ogden was, like, probably our main haunt, and it was, like, a lot of shows that probably would play at, like, the Marquee now, played at Ogden, but, you know, growing up and going to a bunch of, like, pop punk and ska shows, and that was kind of music that I was into, so that was kind of helped, you know, birth everything. And then it was actually really interesting because I didn't pay attention as much as I probably should have to the local Denver music scene. And then when I left and went to college and I started, you know, being able to use the internet, you know, better, obviously, like, this is, you know, I think MySpace is kind of just starting as I was going into college. So we were still going, like, mp3.com and the whole process of discovering new artists online.
Pure Volume was big, I remember, at that time. I think we're around the same age, so people were discovering it, I mean, through LimeWire and Pure Volume and LiveJournal.
Exactly. We try not to tell anybody that we discovered a lot of bands through LimeWire, but, I mean, I remember there's a couple that I just really fell in love with. Because, I mean, that's how it was. I mean, before then, it's like discovering new music was either go to these shows, see if a local band happened to be playing, or, going to a record store and
zines,
walking up and down the aisles, and my whole thing was, oh, that's a cool looking cover, I like that. That probably is music that I like, and I would just, like, you know, do that. It was very interesting, but one of the, like, I mean, I started getting a better idea about everything, like, as I started at Artery, and I remember one of the reasons that, the reason I started at Artery was I answered a online post at absolutepunk.net, and they had this, like, they posted basically looking for an intern, you know, in the Northern California area, has car access to Sacramento, for Artery Foundation Management. At the time, our biggest band was probably Drop Dead Gorgeous, which was a Denver band, and I wasn't super familiar with them. I just knew that they were from Denver, so it kind of helped me. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like, I've heard of that band before, I know that they're from Denver. And, like, I think one of the other big bands at the time that we had was, like, Team Sleep, which Chino from Deftones, one of his
Far, dude. The band Far, I think it was the guitar player from Far, Sean,
yep.
Right? Yeah, I was obsessed with Far, and that's the whole Sacramento vibe. And
that's Sacramento vibes, exactly. I mean, the Sacramento music scene, like, the Denver music scene has been a lot more recent, you know? I think the Sacramento music scene has kind of had a lot more consistency. Not only do we have Deftones, we have Cake, Tesla is from this area, and, like, Papa Roach is from Vacaville, but they've always pretty much claimed Sacramento, so they have always these, like, really big bands that did really well.
Mm-hmm. As soon as you left Denver, it got cool. The beauty of in-person calls, like, trust me, if you're ever in a conference call, it's a sea of interruption, we'll be okay. But, but, you know, the beauty... like when you left Denver, that's when it started getting cool. And when I left Long Island, that's when like bands like Brand New, Taking Back Sunday, Glassjaw, and Movie Life start blowing up. So whenever people ask me about the scene in LA, I say it's going to get great as soon as I leave.
I mean, the thing is, I remember growing up and the New Jersey scene with like Census Fail,
Midtown,
and,
Thursday,
like you said, Early November, and one of my favorite drive through bands.
Midtown, dude.
A bunch of drive through bands now.
Midtown, Steel Train. I think what was that band that was? I think like Houston Calls.
Like Garden State, that song Garden State. Why can't I think of the name of the band right now?
They were
one of the bigger bands on Drive Thru, and they released this really great album, and they like broke up right away.
What bastards. I'm going to look this up while you're talking. Wait, you said the song is called Garden State?
The Garden Statement.
Garden Statement. Okay, I'm going to look this up while you do that, and then we're actually going to go back to... Oh, Hidden in Plain View, dude.
Yes, that's right. Hidden Plain View. I love that band.
Rob Freeman.
I remember they're New Jersey based, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
My perception of New Jersey scene, as it was always funny, was basically like those Drive Thru Records DVDs, you know, because I saw a lot of Drive Thru bands were either like West Coast or East Coast based. There wasn't really a lot of in between, so it was really interesting to get that perspective.
Yeah, they didn't really have a Midwest contingency. It was SoCal, which I call BroCal, and basically the outskirts of New York City, which is like the Jerseys and the Long Island. Like, you didn't really get too many New York City based bands or breadbasket bands on Drive Thru. I feel like they probably had a satellite office in like some suburb of Jersey. But I guess getting to it, so you ended up answering an ad on Absolute Punk. What did it say in the ad? Like, what drew you to it?
Gosh, it was like this management company's based out of Sacramento, you know, which I went to school in Stockton, which is about 40 minutes south of Sacramento, so really not too far. And they were, like, just looking for an intern, and they listed kind of all the bands that they worked with, and at the time I wasn't, like, super familiar. So the bands, we had, like, Devil Wears Prada and Dance Gavin Dance at the time. It was, like, it was really long time ago, so I remember... I remember seeing it, and it was like, it was really weird because I think I saw it that popped up. I found it like 2 days after my dad had a heart attack. So he ended up, I kind of just viewed it as a sign. And so I started, talking to first Sean Carano, who was working at our company at the time. Sean now manages bands like Polyphia and a couple of other works for, Mercs Now and, Equal Vision. And he was the one I was like kind of going back and forth with. And I said, I was just like, I think it was like 2 months of me just like emailing him constantly, like, "Hey, I really want to do this. Let me know," you know. And they were just super busy at the time. As this is like his artery starts like really taking off, and then
you're actually bringing up two points that, because I really like to look at this show as an advice show for people who end up wanting to become a Will Stevenson in the breadbasket. I've said breadbasket more times on this episode than I've ever used that phrase. But of Idaho, where, first of all, be an intern. Show a company that you're willing to do the grinding and the legwork for free so that you can get their trust. No job is too small. And the other one is the persistence.
Especially in the music business.
Oh, my God. Because everyone's too, quote-unquote, busy. And then if you send someone an email a day later, that job might be filled. So being persistent without being annoying, that's the fine line. So I'm glad that you proved
that. No, I definitely think that is. I think that's especially with the music business. And, you know, I think with the music business when I started, where it's like, you know, I graduated from a pretty good 4-year university, and I was interning, you know, for a year while I was in college. And then once that happened, once I graduated, I kind of came to that crossroads where it's like, okay, I can go to L.A. and start over, I can go to New York and start over, I can go to Nashville and start over, because it was pretty much like the three, you know, main music hubs in this country.
Yep.
If you wanted to try some different things, and I had already developed a pretty solid relationship with Eric, the owner of the company, and Sean, and I liked kind of where the direction it was going. And I remember us sitting around a table when Eric was talking about, it's like, I just had a meeting with the data remember. They look like they want to, like, mention, you know, all these things. And I remember that was one of those bands, too, that I had actually kind of, I was like, oh, I know that band, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, like, helped solidify any, you know, ideas of just the direction that the company was going. So I was like, all right, let's do it. Let's suck it up. And I also, you know, you kind of come to a realization really quickly, especially when you're younger and you don't have as many responsibilities, that working in the music business, especially a lot of people, is just like this amazing thing. And a lot of people really want to do it. You know, it's like, oh, it must be so much fun and hang out all the time. So if you do have these, like, you know, I realized, you know, rather quickly that you got to earn your stripes. You got to kind of put in the work, and you got to realize that, you know, if you don't like the job, there's going to be 20 people online who are ready to take it, you know?
Yep. Well, it's good that you knew that, and you're actually extremely fortunate that straight out of undergrad, you were able to start your career, because people struggle mm-hmm. for a really long time. I mean, people apply for jobs for quite some time, and like you said, I mean, in the beginning, you alluded to me being big because I'm in LA, yeah, but there is a market outside of these cities like LA, Nashville, and New York. I mean, Nashville is definitely burgeoning and becoming more of a force, but I mean, we're around the same age again. Early 90s, if you weren't from Seattle, that was a handicap. So true. It's pretty wild. And then obviously Long Island in 2001, that's where all the A&R people were going. And now Brand New has the number one album on iTunes, which is stupid surreal. So I guess, so when you graduated and you worked at Artery, how many people were at the office actually?
So at the time it was Eric, Sean, there was this other dude, Jared Baker, who, I work with him on one of my bands, Sleep Talk Now. And he also, he runs this, company called High Road Publicity. And he also has his own merch company, and he does merch for like Tory Lanez and Big Crit and a couple other artists. But he was working at the time, and he had, I can't even remember the name. He was managing a band that had some heat. They were from SoCal. It was one of those bands that had some heat, but it just never really got off, you know, the ground. But he was working there, and I came in. We were working out of this small office on J Street, and then...
Oh, yeah, the lettered streets of Sac. That's right. I was just there. It's a pretty precarious driving city, especially.
It is. It's amazing. Really quickly, I mean, for someone who's not great with directions, you know, I was able to adapt really quickly. It's like, okay, I know which way I'm going because of the grid system. So it's like, yep. Now that if I need to get to this block, I just need to go this way, and you're good. You know, you'll eventually hit it.
And if you miss a spot and you're using Waze or Google Maps, it basically changes from 0.1 mile to about 4 miles between all the turnarounds and one ways. Or we can call it 1Js. Yeah, I've actually what's crazy is that this year I've traveled more than when I was touring, and I've been to Sac twice this year. And it was a good city, and the food was delicious. I really, really enjoyed it there. So props to Sac. Right.
It's on the up. And there was a whole thing, I think one of the draws of this place after college, you know, and trying to figure out that next step, you know, I think in college I graduated with a bachelor's of science, which is a business degree with an emphasis in arts and entertainment management. So, like, my whole goal was, you know, pretty quickly I learned in college, okay, I want to work in the music business. I'm really into music. I want to, like, kind of keep that going, keep the passion. And I realized, I was like, well, I could go to, you know, L.A., New York, really be like, you know, a little fish in a big ocean kind of thing, where we can kind of stick to Sacramento. And at the time, Sacramento was probably the coolest, most affordable city in California. And especially coming from a place like Stockton, which is pretty pretty depressed, and coming up here, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. And, you know, just to see the growth that we've done over the last decade is incredible. You know, brand new arena and really great nightlife, really good food, restaurants and everything. So it's an exciting time definitely to be up here.
I would argue that every time is an exciting time to be near you.
That's a good answer.
Thank you. It was totally canned. I actually have a script of 4 canned quotes. I know you're aware that I tell a few dad jokes, but I'm going to save that for another date. So I guess tell me about the inner workings of Artery, because you're you're literally a child. I mean, I say that people in your early 20s, you act like you're old, but you're not. You're in the real world for the first time. So, what was your day-to-day life like?
Gosh, I mean, that was so. I mean, to kind of go back to where, like, I was initially emailing Sean, trying to get an interview, telling him, you know, I really want this. Give me a chance. I'll prove it. I'll prove it's worth your while and everything like that. Finally, about after like a month and a half, we got an interview set up in Sacramento. I come up to their old offices, and I walk in with like a button-down shirt, slacks, you know, nice shoes, like, you know, look like I'm going for a full-on job interview. And I walk into this warehouse, and like, you know, Sean and Eric are both like covered in tattoos. They look like total rockers. And immediately, I was like, oh man, I'm a little overdressed. You know, I totally not used to, you know, coming from college where they like tell you it's like, okay, you want to like, you know, do this and get you ready for interviews and everything.
Dress to
You know,
impress, man.
yeah. And it actually worked out really well because that was one of the things they're like, yeah, they were really impressed. You know, when you walk in, you look like you're ready to do this. You know, super serious. You know, I showed up with a resume and all that stuff, and it was super interesting. And part of the thing with that is like they knew they were growing and they were growing really quickly, but they didn't quite understand, like didn't really get what I had to do yet. You know, they were just one of those things like, we'll just find work for you to do, so just come up here whenever you can. So I would basically try to come up, you know, probably once every week or once every 2 weeks. Whenever I could kind of work it around my class schedule and just come up. And I mean, at the time, I think when I first started, it was like, set up a MySpace page for our company. So I did. I set up a MySpace page. And then, you know, kind of be an A&R and also, you know, answer questions and stuff. And that MySpace page was actually a huge draw for us, like, because that was obviously before the Facebook days,
Yep.
and before it was kind of easier to find contact information for everybody. So you had the MySpace page, and we get sent messages, and that's actually MySpace is how we discovered Brief Carolina. It's how we picked up Evergreen Terrace when we had them back in the day. It was like a couple other artists that
Major
were.
major labels would actually, on the back of CDs, which blew my mind, would list the MySpace page as the preferred website. It was that big. People don't really realize how big it was for bands, and it was obviously because I was doing the full-time touring thing at the time, and MySpace was so friendly to bands. I mean, it got to the
It
point where
was.
bands would add people and people get frustrated, but obviously it's a different world now with Facebook, so.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing. It's just, unfortunately, the MySpace thing was the inability to adapt, you know, as times change and as we see with the internet in general, you know, and all new media, it's just constantly changing. So you kind of have to stay ahead of the curve in order to, you know, really figure out what the next step's going to be. And the thing, which I think why we see a Facebook so successful, because they didn't just pigeonhole themselves into like one category. We're not just going to be a music website, you know. We're not just going to be a social network. We're not just going to be like, you know, we're going to be basically a lifestyle brand, and we're going to have you do everything through it, you know. And I think that, thank God, though, you know, places like MySpace, because I discovered so many artists and bands like Bring Me the Horizon. You know, they wouldn't have had the kind of success out of the gate that they had if it wasn't for the MySpace platform and the top friends and that little music player that we had.
Yep, the song on
And
your profile, man. I mean, that's how I discovered Say Anything was MySpace. And I live in LA, and it's just crazy that when they're an LA-based band, I discovered, you know, Live at the Glory of Love there. And it blows my mind. And what's just funny, just one quick thing before we take a short break, is that with Facebook, now people use Facebook as opposed to texting someone or as opposed to sending emails to people because you just search someone's name. It's just blows my mind that actual legitimate business happens over Facebook. Legitimate. It blows my mind.
Really good legitimate business. I mean, yeah, there's so much money to be made, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of crazy, and it's just like, you know, with it, I'm really curious to see where we stand in 5 years and 10 years. You know, I think everything is it constantly changes, but there's always going to be like new ways for people to communicate, and then once people figure out those ways to communicate, there's going to be another person figuring out, how do I monetize this, and how do I
Oh,
make
that.
money off this, you know?
Well, first of all, Facebook, I can't believe that. I mean, I think it rose to prominence a decade ago, and it's still there. I mean, Friendster didn't last too long, and MySpace had a good run, but Facebook has been over a decade the king. Anyway, we digress. Let's talk more about music after this break, and I guess how you grew into Artery, and then what your day-to-day life is today, your own current day to remember.
Sounds
So,
good.
all right, stick around. Hello, we are back with Will Stevenson, Waldman's Words, Part 2. Again, Will, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
It's pretty dope. So, we were talking a little bit about the social networks, and I want to kind of learn more about the actual ins and outs of Artery from the ground up. I mean, you literally started from the bottom and now you here, you know what I'm saying? So let's hear about that. You were there, you were, I guess, a hyphen. You were doing MySpace, you were doing some A&R. How did you kind of graduate to a more, I guess, describable position?
So I mean, I guess it kind of just came with me. Like the more time that I spent in the office, like I said before, like when I come up here at first, they were like, "We don't really know right now what we want you to do, but come up and we'll just be able to give you stuff." So then I started giving stuff, and then part of me being like, you know, 22-year-old kid is like constantly scouring the internet, looking for new artists and everything, and doing what I can is like a really basic A&R job, you know, and like kind of sending that to Eric and Sean, who at the time obviously had a lot more clout and power, you know, and if they wanted to make something happen, if they're the ones who like saw, you know, the magic, then they would kind of go after it. But I remember it's like two different things. So I remember The Dangerous Summer
Yep.
got pretty big on Absolute Punk. I think they were like unsigned at the time. And they had this like EP that they released, and it was like super buzz. It's just amazing, really, really good EP. And I remember reaching out to them and being like, "Hey, you know what? Really like your music and everything like that." And then showing them to Eric and Sean, and I was like, "Yo, this is a really dope band. You know, there's a possibility they could blow up. I think it's something we should look at." And they're like, "We don't really have time for this, but you know, you should just manage them." And I'm like, "What?" And so. So I remember, God, this is so embarrassing, but so just to show you how green I was, I remember like kind of going back and forth via email with Dangerous Summer for a little bit, and then I think the last email I sent was like, "Hey, so I've never managed any bands before, but like I really believe in you and I think that we could do a lot of cool things together, and I would love it if you just gave me a chance," you know, just being like brutally honest. Which was probably my first mistake.
I mean, I live in LA. Honesty does not help. No, I'm just kidding. Like, no, it's.
Especially in the music business, it's like, you know, fake it till you make it kind of thing.
Oh my God, if you had access to my Facebook feed, you'd be vomiting right now.
This is like, so it's like, it was really interesting. I obviously never got a call back,
Those
or never got
bastards.
an email back from him, which is totally fine. I totally get it. And they ended up doing just fine. So it was like, it was definitely like my first kind of, you know, real world in the streets learning experience with that stuff. And then when I really got a start, I remember we had this band Fate who signed to Metal Blade Records. They were based out of Sacramento. They were like 15 to like 19. So they were just kids, super young, bunch of them were minors, you know, like we'd have to have their parents sign off on stuff in order for them to go out of state. We were setting up the release for the record, and I remember I was doing the band with Sean Carano, and he kind of just was like, "All right, you know, you're gonna kind of take the reins here, and you know, do what you need to do to figure this out." So it was actually a cool experience, you know. First foremost, dealing with people at Metal Blade has always been amazing. They're always like really good, easy to work with, and they were really supportive, especially the fact that they were kids. And I mean, we'd have these like pizza parties at the houses to like have these meetings, and it was just funny because you know you can't have like beers or anything, so it's like soda and pizza
It's
and
like a sleepover
talking to,
party.
yes, exactly, just like discussing business with like the parents who were there who probably didn't have the greatest understanding of how the music business worked, but obviously they're like, "We don't want you to like
You mean
screw up our
momagers and
kids, you
dadagers don't
know."
know anything? I'm in shock. These momagers and dadagers that I've met, they seem to be really, really knowledgeable about everything.
about everything. Their parents,
Everything.
so that's what they're supposed to be.
Oh yeah. They fake it till they make it, or they fake it till they make their kids nuts. Anyway, keep going. So the pizza parties with Fate. That sounds like a fucking emo band name, by the way. Pizza parties with Fate.
Really cool band name, and they were shredders, man. I mean, like really talented kids, which I'm gonna actually kind of touch on after this, but really talented kids, like had a lot of potential, but very, very green, didn't really know what they were doing. Kind of, I think, in a lot of younger kids, you just think, oh, I got signed, so that's it.
That's it.
Now my band's gonna blow up, and everything's on Easy Street, and
The real work begins, man.
What's up?
I said the real work begins, and then
Yeah,
I
it did,
said,
and that's what
man.
I'm trying. Obviously now, when I said that, I'm like, yeah, it's like you haven't even started working yet. Now you have a lot more people who are going to be breathing down your neck, making sure that you produce. But anyway, it's not the greatest understanding. We ended up booking in their first tour. I forgot who it was with, but we booked in their first tour, and literally their third or fourth date in, they're on that stretch of highway in Wayoming. That's
Oh, the Bayside one. Oh, shit.
yes, that the death trap that's ruined a lot of bands. I
Black
actually
Ice,
remember I
man.
woke up one morning and I had like eight missed calls and like 40 texts and a bunch of emails, and the band had hit black ice when they were going through Wyoming and flipped their van trailer, totaled everything. This is the third date in to their first tour ever. They had ordered all this merch and everything like that. One of the dads had to drive out, pick them up in like a U-Haul with all the gear that wasn't like totally thrashed, and get back to California. And it was just kind of a really unfortunate situation because the band was never really able to like recover from that. I'm not sure if they were ready for the necessary work that it would take to recover from it, but they just were never able to. But it was a great learning experience for them because it turns out, ironically, that band, which I'm like super proud of, that was my first band because, so let's see. The singer is now a successful graphic designer based out of Sacramento. He like went to UC Davis and he's doing really great. One of the guitarists joined the military, serving the country, doing great things. The other guitarist was so there was two brothers, like twins in the band, and they ended up moving to Nashville a few years back. They went to Belmont, graduated from Belmont, and one of the guitarists ended up his name is Devin Dawson. So he actually has this really popular country song on the radio right now. He like just opened up for Tim McGraw and Faith Hill in Sacramento. Like
Fate Hill. It's
he's
like
like
Fate
playing.
Hill, man. That's crazy.
He's playing like arenas and stuff, and he's doing
Wow.
like really well. Like his song's awesome, and it's just super funny because he used to be this little shredder, and now he's like this like heartthrob country star.
Wow.
His brother is a producer in Nashville now, and he's doing really, really well. And then the other guitarist in the band, who was the youngest one at the time, he was like 14 or 15. So he's a producer, like he's a studio writer producer as well. He was in LA working with Dr. Luke for a while, and now he is in Nashville working with Diamond Dallas or Dallas Diamond, I
Wait,
think.
Diamond
And
Dallas Page, like the
no,
wrestler?
not like the
Okay.
wrestler,
Oh,
like
yeah.
a big time country producer. He
Wow.
actually just wrote, co-wrote, I want to say like some Jason Aldean, one of the new Jason
Oh, wow,
Aldean
the
songs. He
Vegas guy. Oh my God.
Man, like tons of like, so he's killing it. It's actually, so I think the funny part about the whole thing is like that band easily could have, like these little like dirty little metal kids easily could have just been like, well, oh well, see you later. And they end up kind of finding their lane, a little bit later in life. But they all seem to have a lot of success and they're doing really well. And I always thought that was like super ironic that these little metal kids would eventually go on to have like stupid success.
Yeah, they
Like
usually end
probably
up
more
working at
success
like
than any
Guitar
artist that
Center.
I've ever worked with,
They usually.
especially in like Devin's position. So it's like really cool to see that.
Well, so I guess after Fate, what was your fate? Hoo-hoo-hoo. At the company, like what were you doing? And because I know that you are a manager to a bunch of bands, you want to talk about that transition? Because you really did
Yeah,
it.
I mean,
That's how I
so
know who you
that
are.
I think that was kind of always the plan, you know, from was eventually to be a manager. I wanted to, you know, when I came out of college, my whole goal was to be a tastemaker, work at A&R for a label, and I realized really quickly, obviously, there's not a ton of job security, especially majors, so it's like, well, I'll kind of go this route. And, like, the management stuff just kind of fell in my lap, and that's just kind of being around people like Eric and Sean all the time and just kind of soaking it in, you know, just being around the office, soaking it in and kind of watching them do their magic. I ended up eventually just kind of jumping on, doing day-to-day for a few artists with Sean, doing a day-to-day for a bunch of artists with Eric, and a lot of that, you know, over time kind of transitioned into where I'm kind of at now, where I'm just like, you know, managing bands all the time on top of just a bunch of other things that we do.
Did you have a day-to-day guy for you at that point? Did you have someone to help you, or was it pretty much...
No, see, like, I mean, there's probably been a couple parts where it would have been cool to have, like, a day-to-day, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, I'm definitely one of those people who I don't trust anybody, you know, to do it, and I've dealt, you know, the ups and downs of being a manager, especially in this world where we've worked with a ton of, like, really, really big artists, you know, and it's like, you just kind of want to make sure that you don't get complacent, you stay on top of everything, and then you make sure if anything gets screwed up, it's going to be on you, and it's not going to be because, like, your assistant wasn't able to,
right,
you know, like, book the wrong flight or something like that, you know. I think that was kind of always, like, a really important aspect for us. So it's like, I don't know, maybe one day I'll be at a point where I want that, but I also, like, you know, I've also kind of, you know, I think there was a point where I was working, like, 12 artists, you know, which, it's just too much. It's just, you can't focus enough of your attention on everybody that needs it, and mm-hmm. And now I have a stable of about 4 or 5 artists. I'm really happy with where that's at. That keeps me super busy, and then I'm also, you know, doing other things on the side, not management related right now, which is good. So just kind of staying busy in that regard, and I guess it's just kind of adapting and transitioning, always working with bands, kind of staying on, figuring out ones that are on their way out, kind of starting to work with them, getting them into the right teams and the right positions so that they can succeed. But, you know, as part of any music business, with as much success you have, you're going to have just as much, if not more, failure. So
way more. I mean, I think when I was talking with you about this, it's just like, you get 10 emails, 9 of them suck, but one of them's amazing, and that makes it all worth it.
It's all worth it. That's exactly what it is, you know. It's just very, it's constantly, you know, it's a grind for sure, and I think that that's part of the reason why it's just like, I like the 4 that I have right now. The relationships I have with my artists are really solid and really strong, and keep it going well, because, you know, I think that it's easy to get chewed up and spit out in this business, so you got to kind of keep your personal level and your passions in check to make sure that you're not getting, like, too worked up and too bent out of shape when things don't really go your way.
Well,
it's like, yeah, dude, like, I've been doing this for over a decade, and I'm just kind of used to it at this point, you know. When good things happen, that's awesome, but when bad things happen, I still kind of just like,
Well, that's because you actually give a shit. But we don't have too much time left, so I guess let's just talk about 2 quick things. Who are you currently working with? We don't need to dwell on the past, and I would love your take on what's going on with Artery right now.
Yeah, so currently, well, I mean, I'll start with Artery. Artery's doing, Artery Foundation Management is alive and well, doing great. We obviously had a record label that we recently sold to Warner Brothers. There was just kind of a last-minute deal that arose, and we couldn't kind of say no, and Eric, who owns it, made this decision to kind of go in a different direction. So the label is no more. It's actually owned by Warner now, but then the management company is still doing fine. Currently, I'm working with Hail the Sun, Idola, The Zealots, and this their singer, Michael Martin, who's actually having a lot of success right now, solo-wise, and this band, Sleep Talk, who's Los Angeles-based, and I also help out a couple other artists as well. My buddy Jesse Lawson, who was in
Sleeping with Sirens.
Yeah. And he's music's kind of on the back burner a little bit right now for him because he just opened up a new, like, refurbished, upcycled furniture store, basically.
Oh, wow.
So in Bend, Oregon, where he's at. So it's actually, like, I mean, he's in a really good place. He's super happy, which is, like, all I really care about because I know that, you know, I've just dealt with this for so many years of seeing a lot of people get their dreams shattered, and it's just, like, really a big bummer. So it's nice to kind of see, when I'm dealing with artists, it's nice to see them kind of find new lanes that make them happy, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, making music or playing on, you know, a Warped Tour stage or something like that, you know, so.
Sometimes it's good to separate yourself from, I mean, from music and do some other lane. I mean, think about Haley from Paramore sells hair dye and makes a pretty penny from that. So if you could use your brand to work in other ways, that's awesome.
Which I think is necessary these days.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the direction music's going, you know, everything's going towards streaming. And with that, the pie becomes smaller and smaller, especially for artists, you know. They're getting asked to be paid, you know, less money for the same amount of work that they've done. So you have to, you know, I try to tell all my bands, it's like, you know, what's your side hustle? What's your exit strategy? You do realize that, you know, all of this isn't going to last forever, you know, as I'm sure you've seen. You know, we saw when we were on Warped Tour, going to Warped Tour in, like, you know, 15 years ago and seeing the bands that were crushing it back then, you know, it's a lot of those bands aren't even bands anymore, you know. So what are you going to do in order to make sure that you continue to, like, you know, grow and have something to pay the bills once, you know, this music thing stops?
It was crazy. This year I got to see Anti-Flag and the Ataris, and everyone else was Youngblood. So, actually, sorry, I saw Goldfinger. And I think John Feldman actually stood on stage and was like, I am definitely the oldest dude here. So I completely get it. And I'm 36, so there's these kids in bands that are literally just out of high school that I'm old enough to be their fathers. So it just blows my mind when I look at Warped now versus before. So I guess we're going to wrap this up in a bit. If you have any advice to a young college student in Stockton, California, that might not have as substantive of a beard as you, what would you like to say to them? Or maybe your old self, what advice do you have? Because you even said the side hustle is important, but for someone who's trying to break into the industry, be it, I mean, because Artery, obviously, they had the label, they had the booking agency and the management company. If someone wanted to work at Artery, what would you say to them?
If you want to work at Artery, like, email me, you know, hit up the people, you know, my whole thing was always figure out what you want to do and also realize quickly that maybe what you think you want to do, you actually don't want to do, you know. The advice that I always give to people who are, like, freshly graduated from college and they have that ultimate big question of, like, what do I do next and what's the next step and how does one get in the music business, you know, it's like my whole thing is start off by reaching out to any labels that you're a fan of, any management companies, any agencies, see if they have any internships that are available so that you can, you know, try to work that way and learn the business that way. And also, don't be afraid to pursue things that you might not be super familiar with. You know, you might not know the jazz world, but, you know, for some reason there might be, like, an internship that's near you available for, like, a jazz booking company or something like that, and then you might find out that you love it, you know? I had no idea that I was going to be an artist manager, and I didn't plan for that. That wasn't, like, my goal in life. It was something that just kind of happened, and it's worked out really well so far for me, but a lot of that had to do with me just kind of going out on a limb, you know, going, reaching out to people at Artery Foundation who had a bunch of bands that I was vaguely familiar with, but I wasn't, like, a really big fan, you know, so I didn't really know what they were doing that much, and then just kind of figuring out where we were at and what we were going to do at that time, you know? I think that, like we mentioned before on this, where remember, you know, for every job that you think is really cool and for all the days that you're just like, fuck this, I don't want to do this, remember there's probably 20 people who would be happily willing to take your place.
Oh my God, so many.
Just get the experience, you know?
So many. So don't bitch about that stuff and just grind, because the successes are going to taste that much sweeter. And successes also taste so much better if you failed. Because
exactly.
if you're always killing it, then it's kind of like the
idea of having a trust
fund. You have zero perspective. It's like when you have a trust fund you don't really appreciate it. Or actually, it's funny because you talked about streaming. When I buy an album, I actually listen to it as opposed to if you're streaming something, you have less of an attention span because there's less of a value on it. So.
Exactly. Exactly. It's cool with the background music, but it's like, no, you don't appreciate it as much,
Not when.
for something that took a lot harder work. We don't have the major label budget that we had back, 15 years ago, and it costs these bands need to like bust something out for really cheap. So it's really interesting. It's like, people kind of figuring out how music prioritizes in their lives and figuring out what they work with and what they can do. And obviously, the older you get, the more responsibilities you have, the less free time you have to like just be sitting in front of the computer and looking for new artists, So I think
Yep.
that that's always like really important is just to do what you can, especially for the young ones out there. Just keep your finger on the pulse and figure out what's next. And you're like, YouTube was brand new when I was graduating from college, and now it's like one of the main music discovery tools in the world. And we just didn't have all this stuff, and I just feel like if I would have had this stuff when I was like a 15-year-old kid, I would have loved life. Instead, it was like a whole chore for me to get new music. I have to go to the store or buy a CD. Hope that that CD that you bought actually was worth the $15 that you spent on it, as opposed to then you find out, oh, there was just two good songs on it and the rest of it's crap. Great,
Well, Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake should get royalty checks from YouTube because I think that they're the reason why it became a platform after that Super Bowl incident. Anyway, so we're done. Can you give the tens of millions of people listening right now, I guess, bands, their socials, ways to check them out? And then we'll call it a day.
Thanks for listening. Always feel free to keep up on the Artery Foundation. We have pages on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a website, so you can always like chime in and kind of see what we're doing in that world. And then be sure to check out Hail the Sun. They're about to start a tour with Ida Mighty that's going to be going across the country. Probably going to be hitting the city near you. We have some other really cool things in the works as well. And then there's going to be supporting Silverstein in the UK this December. So we're really excited about that. We have Idola, who just released an amazing record this last summer. I would love for you all to hear it. If you want to go check it out, it should be streaming on all the major platforms. And they're going to be playing Night of Blue Swan up in Sacramento and Los Angeles this December as well. Sleep Talk, Staying Pissed, they just released a new self-titled album earlier this year. It's incredible, really good for fans of the 1975 or Angels and Airwaves. And then finally, the Zealots actually just sent me their brand new mastered album that they recorded on their own, and it is real juicy. And I'm really excited to kind of send that to people, and hopefully we can see more coming out of these guys soon.
Well, I hope to as well. Thank you again for your time. I'm sure we will converse at a later date, possibly not this long. But thank you, Will. And every single Tuesday, Waldman's Words, 5 p.m. Pacific time, which is the Will Standard time zone, and 8 o'clock on the East Coast, which is 3 hours later than the Will Standard time zone. And also, well, everything revolves around you. You're my new Old Testament. And every single Sunday, bright and early, 5 a.m. when Will wakes up, and 8 a.m. on the East Coast. So have a great day, guys, and tip your bartenders.